I'll see how it goes. I've never done this. I'm taking a book, and this is the book. It's entitled People. It's by Lee Robertson. How many of you know who Lee Robertson was? Okay. And it has in it, it has in it 18 chapters. I'm not sure we'll cover all of them. But, and I'm going to make Sunday school lessons out of these messages that he delivered. And so today it's just introductory. We're going to talk in general about not a specific person particularly, but people in general. But let me give you an idea of what's ahead of us. After today we'll be, these are the titles that he gave the chapters. I may even change titles. And I won't use verbatim everything that he's done. I'm sure Dr. Robertson would be okay with this, by the way. I knew him personally. I sang on his, I'm not saying this to boast, it's just a privilege I had. I sang on his radio broadcast a number of times. I sang in the quartet at Highland Park Baptist Church. I directed the a cappella choir at Tennessee Temple at one time. I've sung duets with Lee Robertson. I've gone with him to little podunky places and led singing when he preached a revival out in the hills of Tennessee. I've watched him. I've led singing and sung at the Union Gospel Mission, which Highland Park started in Chattanooga. And I've seen Lee Robertson, a great guy who loved the Lord, be down on his knees beside a filthy, stinking, sot drunk and put his arms around him and give him the gospel and lead him to Christ. I watched him do that. I was president of the junior class when I was a student there, and I remember going in. He was a very austere man in many ways. When he was in charge, you knew he was in charge. He really headed things up. And so I, as the president of the junior class, I had to go in to his office and discuss our projects and some of the things we were going to do. And I remember thinking, oh, my goodness, I'm going to Dr. Robertson's office. And I'll never forget. He opened the door and said, come in, Jerry, have a seat. And it was just like I was talking to a dear friend. One time I was at his house kind of late at night. He met me at the door, had his sleeves rolled up. He said, come on in, Jerry. And I said, okay. And he was watching a boxing match. He loved boxing. And so he said, sit down. He said, sit down and watch this with me. And I sat down for a while and watched a boxing match. He was an unusual guy. He loved souls. Don, you heard him preach a time or two or three at least at New Hope when he came there often. And so these are some of the titles. Dr. Luke and His Medical Report. Matthew's Letter to Zacchaeus. That's an interesting one. It's a supposed letter, but it's interesting what he's done with that. Run, Jonah, run. Jezebel and the Juniper Tree. That's going to be fun. The Rise and Fall of Solomon's Empire. Elijah's Secret of Power. And then he's got one with an exclamation point after the title, Exit Moses. The next one is David's Afflictions. And the next one is The Cry of Jeremiah, O Lord, Correct Me. That's a challenging one. I don't know about you, but I really have a hard time telling somebody, correct me. Paul, dead or alive? And then the need of Nicodemus, that will be primarily salvation. And then one entitled, And Hannah Prayed. That's a touching one. The Sin of Noah. The Spirit of Caleb. When Jabez Prayed. Mighty Manasseh. And the final one is the education of Elijah. Lord willing, we'll be going through those, and I'm going to just try to make them fit Sunday school. And I'll probably read verbatim some things because he always included wonderful illustrations. But the first one is entitled, What Makes People Great? I do not have an outline for you. This is introductory. And I want you to think with me this morning. I did sit at my computer and I did put some thoughts down, but I didn't even print it out. I said, Lord, let me just share from my heart and let us participate as a class in a discussion on what makes people great. Now, I want you to think about that. I also went online to just, do you ever use the online dictionaries? Do you ever do that? How many of you do that? Okay, yeah. You can have your dictionary on your shelf, and it's helpful, but if you go online, there are two or three sources there that just give exhaustive information on almost any word. And so I put the word great in, and I was surprised. There were actually 23 possible definitions of the word great. Unbelievable how it is the word great is used. I believe that it's overused. Ask somebody how you're doing. How you doing? Oh, great. How was it on your vacation? Oh, it was great. You think about the use of the word great. We use the word great to excess today. Yeah, and the word wonderful is overused as well. And some people say, oh, great. It was great. Are you, you're kidding me. It was great? It was great. You say, it was great. People say, oh, it was wonderful. Was it really? Yeah. So we're going to think about the word great just a little bit. And then I'm going to ask you to tell me some of the things that you would use to define greatness in people. And then I'm going to share with you, and I think I said something about it earlier, and some of you last week, and some of you may remember what Dr. Robertson's, what he said was necessary for a person to be great. But we're going to discuss that. And I think he's right. I've really thought about this and meditated on it. And I believe that when I share with you what he has, that you will agree. Let's think about greatness. What do we think of when we think of somebody who is great? Just various ideas. Okay, Bob? Okay. Someone with a servant's heart. Okay, good. I'm not going to comment. I'm just going to let you tell me. You give me your ideas and what you think others think constitutes greatness, okay? Let's just think about greatness in people. And let your mind go all directions, okay, honey? Okay. What they've accomplished, their leadership ability, okay? Good. Somebody else. What do you think would make a person considered to be great? Or what is, in your opinion, some general ideas about greatness? Okay, Ron? Somebody that loves God. Okay. Move out in the spiritual realm, yes, stay there, but also think in terms of the secular realm a little bit too. Let's get a good mix of the ideas that are out there on greatness. Okay. Roland? Good. Okay. And that, he mentioned Lincoln and the fact that he took what he had in the way of circumstances and did the right thing and it turned out good, and that's a mark of greatness. By the way, it is not a waste of time to read biographies on Abraham Lincoln. I have two or three in my library, and I have read them. And it's phenomenal, and I have several quotes of Lincoln, but my favorite of his is when the a group of black people in, I can't remember whether it was Boston. I think it was Boston. I get Boston and Philadelphia mixed up in my mind. They thanked him for what he had done. And this, I said I wasn't going to elaborate, but I want to just mention this. And as a token of their gratitude, they gave him a beautiful Bible. And in his acceptance of this Bible, he made this statement. Of all God's gifts to man, the Bible is most precious. Were it not for the Bible, we could not know right from wrong. That's a quote from Abraham Lincoln. And that quote is absolutely true. Absolutely true. Of all the tangible gifts that God has given man, the Bible is most precious. And were it not for the Bible, we could not know right from wrong. And the reason we don't know right from wrong as a nation today is because we have forsaken God's best gift. That is, not outside of His Son, we've forsaken His Word. Yeah, and there are several. Yeah, but my favorite was that one. Okay, now, greatness. That's good. Thanks, Roland. Did you have another comment? Okay. All right, come on, Sarah. Okay, power. That is, the world sees that as greatness. It does. And Dr. Robertson in his message mentions that. He mentions Hitler and Stalin and several other people who had great power. And that was considered by many to be greatness. Okay? Other comments? Okay? Amy? Okay. Yes. We know certain names, don't we, of people who have lots of money. And in the accumulation of wealth, they are great. Okay? So, money. Other ideas. Okay, Mary? Okay, so you're saying greatness is be consistent and do the right thing. Stand for, okay. 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 People who give their times and talents to meet, help people who have needs. Okay. That's good. Okay. Sure, there were religious people and various and sundry who passed by on the other side, but the Good Samaritan had compassion. And kind of goes along with what Brother Fred said. Yeah. Okay? Okay. Okay. Loyalty is one of the characters of a person who is great. And I think when we think of loyalty, we need to realize that it's important to be loyal to the right person and the right things. There are people who are loyal to that which is evil. And so, but being loyal to that which is good. And also, there's a lot of thought that's come into my mind on the subject of loyalty over the last several years. And a lot of people have the idea that it is disloyal to disagree. And disloyalty is not just disagreement. Disloyalty is when you go behind somebody's back and you talk negatively about them because you disagree with them. That's disloyalty. And so, but there are people who consider disagreement. If you disagree with me, you're being disloyal. Okay? Vern. Okay, good. And I would imagine many of us had somebody else who came to our mind, as Vern mentioned, this lady, Maxine Borman. Borman? B-O-R-M-A-N? My seventh grade teacher was Ms. Borman, and she was wonderful. No, it wasn't Maxine, but no, she wasn't married. She was an old maid. But she was a good teacher. Oh my goodness, she was tough. She was tough. Elaine met two of my teachers, I think, Irene Lafayette and Miss Borman. I took Elaine to Miss Borman's house. She lived near the plaza when we hadn't been married very long. Miss Borman was tough, but she cared about us. I really appreciated that. Okay, greatness. Any other comments? Okay, Mary? That's okay. Hospitality.
Yeah, hospitality.
Hospitality. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and we almost all of us know people like that. I could name some that positively influenced me personally, and Elaine and me. People who just said, "Come on in, Jerry, make yourself at home." And sometimes they'd add, "Where you ought to be." That is true. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. 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 Yes. You don't have to have fame. You don't have to have money. You don't have to have power. You don't have to have all of these things to truly be a great person. Notoriety. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
People of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Notoriety. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let me share some of the things I found from the dictionary, and then I'm going to get into what Dr. Robertson shared. And I probably will take 2 weeks because I'd like to give you a handout with some things to fill in and discuss in a little more detail what he shares concerning greatness. But just to give you some idea, the word great, when used as an adjective, usually or comparatively large in size, dimension. Great fire destroyed nearly half the city. So that's one of the ideas of greatness. We had a great flood here in 51. Some of you were not alive then yet, weren't even thought of. But some of us, there are other people in this room, Jim's shaking his head, who remember that flood. Elaine was in Macon, Georgia, and she saw the gasoline tank that floated and tipped over and caught fire on black and white television. That was a great, great flood. My uncle went down to the stockyards and caught a pig and put it in the trunk of his car. And took it and butchered it. Yeah, because pigs were swimming all over the place. That was a great flood. So that's one of the ways. Large in number, numerous, great hordes of tourists descend on Europe each summer, so on, that idea. Unusual or considerable in degree, power, intensity, etc. And used with regard to great pain, for instance. So the word great is used in so many different ways. Wonderful, first rate, very good. We had a great time, that's great. That's the way we use it mostly in our day and time. We had a great time. And we often say it that way, don't we? We had a great time. Doesn't sound great when you say it like that. Notable, remarkable, exceptionally outstanding. Being in such an extreme or notable degree, great friends, a great talker, etc. Important, highly significant, consequential, the great issues in American history. Distinguished, famous, for instance, a great inventor, of noble or lofty character, or a person of great thoughts, or the expression of great thoughts, chief or principal, the great hall, the greatest novel, that idea. of high rank, official position, or social standing, a great noble, much in use or favor. Humor was a great word with the old physiologists. Now, I don't know what the significance of that statement is, but that's in much use or favor. Of extraordinary power, having unusual merit, very admirable, a great statesman. That definition has in it some of the connotation that Dr. Robertson would use in what we're going to share with you in a few moments. Of considerable duration or length, he waited a great while for the train. And then I'm not going to give the rest of them, but that's just down through number 14, and there are 23 altogether. And so the idea of that which is great or a person being great has many, many connotations. And everything that everybody shared this morning, and those of you who had thoughts that you did not share, is in some way a form of the definition of greatness of people. And it is important for us to understand that our evaluation as to whether or not we are great, we should stop to think about that. And we should ask ourselves the question, who do I want more than anybody else in the world to think that I'm great? And do I want them to think that I'm great because I have an ego? Or do I want them to think that I'm great because of God's presence in my life? The idea of greatness and being great can... Jim, I keep walking back and forth and your head keeps going... I'm going to ask Don to come sit up here, okay? I'll stay over here. You're all right, Jim, I tell you what. I like old people. I'm going to use pastors. The idea of greatness, there's just so many ideas of greatness out there. But my point to you is this, especially when you see what Dr. Robertson shares in his thoughts. Everyone in this room has the potential for greatness. There's no exception. Now, let me share. Sure.
Your idea of greatness.
Absolutely.
I mean, greatness should be, if you are great, should be what other people think of you.
I know. That's right. Yeah. If our motivation is the satisfaction of our ego, then we're wrong. Yeah, that's a wrong reason for wanting to be great. And I'm not trying to sound pious. I want to be great for the right reasons. Does that make sense? I want to be great for the glory of God. I want to be great for the good of others. I want to be great for the legacy that I would leave for my children and grandchildren. I want to be great so that my neighbors, when they think of me, will think of somebody who is Christ-like. And so on. So our desire for greatness and the motivation behind it is important consideration too. That's right. There are people who want to be great, and even in the spiritual realm, so to speak, in service for Christ, because they like that pat on the back. They like the flowery words that people get up and say about them. They like to have people brag on them and talk about how wonderful they are. Well, I question the rightness of that. Yeah, I question the rightness of it. Our text for this lesson is 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 24 through 28. So turn there, and we're going to be just getting a very little said about this so that next week we can really delve into what makes people great. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 24 through 28. Well, putting it a little... in a little more context. it almost sounds a little bit egotistical at some to some degree here as Paul writes. Go back to verse 16. I'm going to put it in pretty good context here. I say again, let no man think me a fool, if otherwise yet as a fool receive me, that I may boast myself a little. That which I speak not after the Lord, but as it were foolishly, in this confidence of boasting, seeing that many glory after the flesh, I glory also. For ye suffer fools gladly, seeing ye yourselves are wise. For ye suffer if a man bring you into bondage, if a man devour you, if a man take of you, if a man exalt himself, if a man smite you on the face. He's talking here about man's ideas and the reactions to circumstances and so on. And he's thinking about himself, and he has been called into question. His apostleship is being called into question. And then he goes on down in verse 21. He said, I speak as concerning reproach, as though we had been weak. Howbeit, whereinsoever any is bold, then he puts in parenthesis, I speak foolishly, I am bold. In other words, I'm being silly to brag on myself. He's just being honest. You know, just it is hard to be honest, isn't it, about ourselves? I'm goofy. On the way to out here this morning, I sneezed, and I do something so silly sometimes when I sneeze. I sneeze, and I go, and I blabber off something silly, and so on. And I said, I'm goofy. I told Elaine, I'm goofy. Can you be honest about yourself? Are there times when it would be wise for you to say, I'm stupid? Mm-hmm. Is there times when it's wise to say, I probably am totally wrong about this, but this is the way I feel? Yeah, Paul was here he was just pulling back the curtain. He was saying, I'm going to be a WYSIWYG. That's an acronym for what you see is what you get in computer language. He says in verse 22, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. I'm up there too. They're bragging on themselves. I'll just brag on me. It's kind of the way he was talking. Have you ever done that? And then he says, verse 23, are they ministers of Christ? And then he puts in parentheses again, I speak as a fool. I am more, he said. And this is where it starts. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one, 39 lashes. 5 times he got 39 lashes, and those were not love pats, by the way. Thrice I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. By the way, when he was stoned, he was left for dead. They thought he was dead. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. 3 times a shipwreck. How many people survive that? A night and a day have I been in the deep, a night and a day in the ocean. Back then, where they didn't have helicopters and all the stuff to rescue people. In journeyings often, I'm on the road all the time, going here and there and everywhere. In perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in the town, in the country, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. In weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, and I imagine sometimes not by choice, simply because there was no food available. in cold and nakedness. Now, not stark naked. Back then, nakedness was the not having enough clothing. Besides all these things that are without, all that's outside of my body, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. That's something. You think about it. You do an in-depth study of the life of the Apostle Paul. You study from his you study prior to his conversion. I have the belief, based on just what I believe would be the normal thing, that probably Saul of Tarsus was present at the crucifixion of Jesus Christ and was involved in putting him on the cross to some extent. Not directly, he wasn't one of the soldiers. He was a part of the Sanhedrin. He was among those who were saying, crucify him, get rid of him. And then he had that Damascus Road experience. And I think prior to the Damascus Road experience, because he probably was present at the crucifixion, and he also watched how Christians took his torture and how they were glad. He was there at the stoning of Stephen. And so here he is on the road to Damascus, and he is intercepted by the very person that he was persecuting. And he humbled himself and admitted he had been wrong and put his faith in Jesus Christ. And after that, it's one thing after another. Bad things? What was Paul's attitude toward the bad things that happened to him? And this is the key. He said, I'd have you to understand, the book of Philippians, he said, I'd have you understand that things that have happened unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. We'll stop there. Next week, if you haven't